want to thank you for checking out another podcast of Ferocious Talk, where we ain't scared. My name is A1, and last week's podcast was really good. We talked about why the music industry is a trap house, part two. It was very, very good. These particular podcasts on that particular topic, we're going to continue into the future. I'm not sure how many we'll do, but as long as there's information flowing, we will continue to record them. I want to thank Henry Williams, the COO of the label, We Ain't Scared Records, for coming on and really just educating the public and those either inside or outside of the industry. So more on that. Now, also, I want to shout out Black Lives Matter. Please keep doing what you're doing. It is very, very important. And all we ever say as Black people is our life matters. Now, if you haven't heard the previous podcast, you can get over to podomatic.com. You can find me under Society and Culture, also on iTunes under the category Personal Journals. And get on over to weaintscared.com. That was for Flint. That was the initial charity that we started with. We have some other charities on our list for next year. Flint is always going to be at the top of the list because everybody deserves clean water. I think it's even more pronounced today, Thanksgiving. So happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Hope that you are enjoying your family, your friends, the food, the fellowship. Be safe out there. Don't drink and drive. Take it easy. All right. Also, weaintscaredrecords.com. Get on over to weaintscaredrecords.com. We dropped 3 singles this year. 2018 is going to be pretty active for us as well. We really are going to do something that a lot of other labels are afraid to do, but as you know, we ain't scared to do. So let's jump into today's topic. And I think it's fitting because it is Thanksgiving and most people don't understand we're celebrating the mass or massacre or killing of indigenous people, Indians, Native Americans, at the hands of white Americans. And so we want to sort of deal with a certain component of that just as it relates to the destruction factor, right? I really want to make sure that we take it and we remember there's some other things that are going on as well, as it relates to that particular topic. So let me just go ahead and jump on in. It's called 8 Successful Black Communities Destroyed by White People. 8 Successful Black Communities Destroyed by White People. Now, I have notes all over the place here, and I'll try to string this together, but I actually read this at the Atlanta Black Star, or AtlantaBlackStar.com, and let me just go ahead and jump in, because it's pretty lengthy, but after emancipation, or the Emancipation Proclamation, and that was the freeing of the slaves in America, and after sharecropping, in 1906 in Atlanta, and well after the Civil War, Black people, in our determination and fight for survival, rebuilt, okay? And I'm not going to say from the ground up, all right? I think that's putting it lightly. It was under the ground up, okay? We pulled ourselves up with nothing, right? From nothing. And we created 8 small towns or cities that were thriving and successful without the help of any white people. Why? Because we had no choice. You know, there's that saying, you don't know what you're capable of or how strong you are until you have to do something you've never done before because there's no one else there. And again, with no help at all, we created millionaires, okay, which would have been future billionaires and business owners. They were bankers, lawyers, doctors. We owned airplanes, right? Airports, schools, post offices, movie theaters. I mean, we literally built entire city infrastructures. Again, with no help from anyone, especially at that time, white people. Okay, no money from white people. In some of the articles that I will read, it is recorded that money circulated 36 to 100 times in the black community before it left. 36 to 100 times. That's incredible. All right, let me keep going. The basis of what I'm going to read to you about how these tragedies occurred, all right, and what was used as a tactic or tactics, right, to destroy them. These white communities, these neighboring white communities used fear-mongering, false rape accusations of white women, loss of job opportunities, which is ironic, right? Because you enslave us and we work for nothing for over 350 years and then we're freed and are told to find work, okay? But then white people got mad when we did work because they were afraid we would take their jobs. WTF. Really? So of course, we're going to take jobs. We got to work, idiot. Anyway, so do you want us to be self-sufficient or not, right? It was like the mentality was that they wanted us to just die broke, jobless, and defeated. But that ain't our legacy, people. That ain't our legacy. Our legacy as a people, we're overcomers. You can't stop black people. We're too strong, and it's our strength that will continue to carry us, even against the most hateful white attacks. The other irony is black people don't go looking for problems, but white people sure do. There's a history of it. Now, this is not me pulling this out of thin air. There is a history. They usually come into our neighborhoods, our communities, without provocation. Okay, to act out their violent tendencies. And proof of their violent tendencies are these mass shootings that have taken place at the hands of white men. There is a connection between mass violence and the psyche of white men. And it disturbs me that white men as a whole want to act as if they don't have something very wrong with some of their other or their white male counterparts. Another example of this is how extensive this sexual abuse, the sexual assaults in Hollywood, corporate America, Washington, D.C., and our current president, 45, and how often he sexually assaulted women with no punishment or repercussions. Okay? These aren't black people doing this. And now some people may hear that and say, so are you saying that black people don't commit sexual? No, it's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it's condoned by a lot of white Americans. If it's a white male or a white face doing it, they're not ostracized. They want you to feel sorry for them. You know, it's not their fault. You know, they were going through something. That's a problem. Lack of accountability. So I'm going to read, just to get back on point, a short synopsis of each of the eight communities destroyed by their white neighbors. And again, you can go on AtlantaBlackStar.com and you can see this. But the first one, the Atlanta Race Riot. This was in 1906. Okay, now remember, Emancipation Proclamation ended in 1865 or was created. So when the Civil War ended, African Americans in Atlanta began entering the realm of politics, establishing businesses and gaining notoriety as a social class. Now, increasing tensions between black wage workers and the white elite began to grow, and ill feelings were further exacerbated when blacks gained more civil rights, including the right to vote. Now, so the tensions exploded during the gubernatorial election of 1906, in which M. Hoke Smith and Clark Howell competed for the Democratic nomination. Both candidates were looking for ways to disenfranchise African-American voters. Sound familiar? Still going on. So, because they each felt that the black vote could throw the election to the other candidate. So, Hoke was a former publisher of the Atlanta Journal, and Clark Howell was the editor of the Atlanta Constitution. Both of these candidates used their influence to incite white voters and help spread the fear that whites may not be able to maintain the current social order. Fear. All right, so now, of course, it was false what they were saying, which led to riots and Black Death. Now, we're going to move on to Greenwood, Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is more commonly referred to as Black Wall Street, okay? May 31st through June 1st of 1921, right? So we're talking about, what, 10, about 10 years later, 15 years later. So during the oil boom of the 1910s, the area of Northeast Oklahoma around Tulsa flourished, including the Greenwood neighborhood, which came to be known as the Black Wall Street. The area was home to several lawyers, realtors, doctors, and prominent Black businessmen. Now get this, many of them were multimillionaires. At the time, 1921, they were millionaires. So Greenwood boasted a variety of thriving businesses. Again, this is the article where the dollar circulated, the Black dollar circulated 36 to 100 times. Okay, it would take up to a year for the currency to leave the community. Incredible. Now, the neighborhood was destroyed during a riot that broke out after a group of men from Greenwood attempted to protect a young Black man from a lynch mob. Now, on the night of May 31st, 1921, a mob called for the lynching of Dick Rowland, a Black man who shined shoes. Now, after reports spread that on the previous day he had assaulted Sarah Page, a white woman, in the elevator she operated in that downtown building, that's when things went left. In the early morning hours of June 1st, 1921, Black Tulsa was looted. It was firebombed from the air. Think about that. Planes flew over the town and firebombed it from the air and burned it down. And these were all white rioters. Sensing a pattern here, the governor declared martial law, and National Guard troops arrived in Tulsa. Guardsmen assisted firemen in putting out the fires and removed abducted African Americans from the hands of white vigilantes and imprisoned all Black Tulsans, not already confined, into a prison camp at the convention hall and the fairgrounds, some for as long as 8 days. Total destruction. Okay, moving on. As my page loads here. Okay. Chicago race riots of 1919. Pardon me. The red summer of 1919 marked the culmination of steadily growing tensions surrounding the great migration of African Americans from the rural South to the cities of the North during World War I. Now, Chicago was one of the northern cities that experienced violent race riots during that period. Drawn by the city's meat packing houses, railway companies, and steel mills, these were manufacturing jobs. The African American population in Chicago skyrocketed from 44,000 in 1910 to over 230,000 in 1930. Wow. So when the war ended in late 1918, thousands of white servicemen came home. They returned home from fighting in Europe to find that their jobs in the factories, the warehouses, the mills had been filled by newly arrived Southern Blacks or immigrants. Makes sense. You're not here. Jobs need to be filled. That's not our fault. But, of course, on July 27, 1919, an African-American teenager drowned in Lake Michigan after he challenged the unofficial segregation of Chicago's beaches and was stoned by a group of white youths. His death and the police refusal to arrest the men who caused it sparked a week of race rioting between Black and white Chicagoans, with Black neighborhoods receiving the worst of the damage. All right, moving on. Rosewood Massacre of 1923. Rosewood was a quiet, self-sufficient whistle stop on the Seaboard Airline Railway in Florida. Okay, we're across the map now. Tulsa, Atlanta, Florida, Chicago. We tried in many places across the U.S., but let me continue. By 1900, the population in Rosewood had become predominantly African American, right? Some people farmed or worked in local businesses, including a sawmill in nearby Sumner, a predominantly white town. Now, in 1920, Rosewood blacks had three churches, a school, a large Masonic hall, turpentine mill, a sugarcane mill, a baseball team, and a general store. Okay, now there was a second one that was white owned. Now, the village had about two dozen plank two-story homes, some other small houses, as well as several small unoccupied plank structures. Now, what happened was it was spurred by unsupported accusations that a white woman in Sumner had been beaten and possibly raped by a black drifter. Again, fear, false accusations to create the environment for the attack. All right, continuing. Washington, D.C., race riots of 1919. Post-war Washington, D.C., now, this is crazy. We're going north, south, east, west. Anyway, post-war Washington, D.C., roughly 75% white, was a racial tinderbox. Housing was in short supply and jobs so scarce that ex-doughboys in uniform panhandled along Pennsylvania Avenue. However, Washington's black community was then the largest and most prosperous in the country, with a small but impressive upper class of teachers, ministers, lawyers, and businessmen concentrated in the LaDroit Park neighborhood near Howard University. Now, there was a battle over housing, right? And low-level government jobs. And so in July of 1919, white men, many in military uniforms, responded to the rumored arrest of a black man for rape, okay? And that caused 4 days of mob violence. They rioted, they randomly beat black people on the street, and pulled others off streetcars in the attacks. And when police refused to intervene, the black population fought back, as they should. Good for you. Okay, continuing. Knoxville, Tennessee. There was a race riot in Knoxville in 1919. The race riot in Knoxville broke out after a white mob mobilized in response to a black man accused of murdering a white woman. Sad that white women are always the linchpin for this. I mean, in my opinion, now as I'm reading this, white women should be outraged. Why are you always using a violence or threat of violence against us to justify your violence against black people? But that's another podcast on why white women aren't outraged. So we're going to keep moving. The 5,000 strong mob stormed the county jail searching for the prisoner. They freed 16 white prisoners, including suspected murderers. After looting the jail and the sheriff's house, the mob moved on and attacked the African-American business district where the money was, right? So many of the city's black residents, aware of the race riots that had occurred across the country that summer, they armed themselves. They were ready and barricaded the intersection of Vine and Central to defend their businesses. So they called in the National Guard to come and quell the actual violence. And, of course, they were shooting sporadically for hours and outgunned. Of course, the black defenders gradually fled, which allowed the guardsmen to gain control of the area. All right. So, again, I know you're sensing a pattern, but we're going to continue because this is important. This is history that we are that you're learning about. So, New York City, the draft riot. This was in 1863. Now, understand, Emancipation Proclamation, 1865. The draft riot of 1863 was a four-day eruption of violence in New York City during the Civil War, stemming from deep worker discontent with the inequities of the first federally mandated conscription laws. In addition, the white working class feared that emancipation of enslaved blacks would cause an influx of African-American workers from the South. Duh. Of course it would. But you don't have to be mad. In many instances, employers used black workers as strike breakers during this period. Thus, The white rioters eventually turned their wrath on the homes and businesses of innocent African Americans and anything else symbolic of their growing political, economic, and social power. So on July 13th, 1863, organized opposition broke out across the city. The protest soon morphed into a violent uprising against the city's wealthy elite and its African American residents. This went on for 4 days, by the way. And finally, the police stepped in and they quelled the violence. Moving on, East St. Louis, the massacre, 1917. So during the spring 1917, blacks were arriving in St. Louis at the rate of about 2,000 a week. Wow. With many of them finding work at the Aluminum Ore Company and the American Steel Company in East St. Louis. We were looking for work. We wanted to work. We were not trying to be dependent. We wanted to work and earn money. Now, some whites feared loss of job and wage security because of the new competition. Ugh. All right. And further resented newcomers arriving from a rural, very different culture. In other words, black people. So anyway, tensions between the groups ran high and escalated when rumors were spread about black men and white women socializing at labor meetings. Look, guys, black men are the beep. Why wouldn't women of all kinds want to associate with us? We are the beep. Don't get mad. As they say, yo, chose me. All right, keep going. In May, 3,000 white men gathered in downtown East St. Louis. The roving mob began burning buildings and attacking black people. The Illinois governor called in the National Guard to prevent further rioting, and conditions eased somewhat for a few weeks. But on July 1st, white men driving a car through a black neighborhood began shooting into houses, stores, and a church. A group of black men organized themselves to defend against the attackers. As they gathered, they mistook an approaching car for the same one that had earlier driven through the neighborhood, and they shot and killed both men in the car, who were in fact police detectives sent to calm the situation. So mistaken identity, but guess what? You come shooting in my house, and I see you driving the same similar car where shots were coming. Hey, mistaken identity, it happens. I'm going to defend myself. I'm not going to wait for you to kill me and then say, oh, I should have shot first. So I know that was a lot of information, and you may have to listen to this twice to get kind of absorb it all, but you can go on again to AtlantaBlackStar.com. And these were 8 successful, you know, black communities. And the reason why this is important for me to record is I'm so sick and tired of the perception that black people are lazy, that we want to mooch off the system, welfare. You know, we were on our way as a community, okay, in the early 1900s of becoming self-sufficient. And as soon as our white counterparts got, as soon as we were being more successful than our white counterparts, then it became a problem. And so then it became violent. And so now when you look at the conditions across America and the state of the black community and how because of these events, if these events did not happen, black people would be more wealthy than our white counterparts. So don't get on black people about poverty, about lack of education, about any of our social conditions that for whatever reason you think are unacceptable. We did and continue to do everything we're supposed to do. But because we do it better, let me say that again, because whatever we do it better than anybody else on the planet. There are certain groups, and I'm going to, for this podcast, some white people, somebody say, oh, you don't say all white people, you can't say all white people. Look, there's some good and some bad, I know, but there are enough bad ones that exist where even the good ones aren't saying anything. So what does that tell you, right? And again, some, but the point is we fight, we work, we strive. We fight, we work, we strive. And then when we do everything by the book, we do everything exactly like the other side does. We peacefully protest. We march. We build successful businesses. You hate it. You're jealous. You're envious. You're fearful. And because of that, your first inclination is to go to violence. Think about that. You can't handle taking an L, a loss. So you'd rather fight and kill than to just accept defeat. And this is a capitalist society. That's what's so crazy about it. It says there's no ceiling to the amount of money you can make, and there's no bottom the amount that you can lose. And we were on our way. And we're still doing relatively good. But I'm talking about communities, black communities. This could have spread. These are 8 cities. New York, Tennessee, Chicago, Florida, Oklahoma. I mean, those cities, had they been left alone, would have been emulated across the country and would have totally taken care of the fact that we didn't get our 40 acres and a mule. So the government didn't want to give it to us. We went out and made it, and then they did their best to make sure that we never recovered and we never really connected with, and in terms of having our own space and our own places. And it still exists to this day. That no matter how well we do, that you are so jealous and you are so envious that you will create situations so that you can exact your hate because you're jealous. You hate us. You know why you hate us? You hate us because your women want us. That's the other part to it. You hate us because we're so good physically. Sports, business, our acumen, our minds. You hate it. Look inside yourself. The problem is not with us. The problem is with you. All right. Well, I want to thank you for checking out another podcast of Ferocious Talk. You got some good food for thought. My name is A1, and we ain't scared.